Hi there, and welcome back to Straight Talk for Mental Health. I'm Karen Goslin, founder and owner of KG and Associates, a mental health clinic that provides a wide range of services for individuals and couples and families, children, teens, adults, and older adults. I'm here today with my associate, Janice D'Souza, who's been on our team now for a year and a half, providing excellent services to our individuals. Welcome, Janice.
Thanks, Karen. How are you today?
I'm good. It's been a busy week. I don't know what's going on. Almost everybody I've talked to has been so crazy busy. I'm calling it the September surge.
That's
I
true.
know. I thought it was going to be busy last week with school starting, but I forgot. There's always a bit of a lag because you know, it's almost like that second week of September, and everybody I've talked to is as busy as we are. So it's been a good week and a busy week. So it's great. So our topic today, guys, for all of our listeners and clients or anybody who's new to our podcast, today we're talking about couples counseling done right. Excuse me. So I you know, there was a lot of juicy topics we could have picked for this week. There's so much going on. And Janice, I know you and I were talking earlier this week about the couple work that we do. And so I guess, you know, out of a million choices, this is what I've landed on today. And I hope that this information we provide today to our listeners is helpful. And whether you are in a new relationship or thinking of a new relationship, or you've been in a longer term relationship, managing our intimacy and our romance is honestly one of the trickiest things we'll ever do as humans. And we get, you know, caught up in all kinds of difficult situations or challenging situations for good reasons. That emotional stage of development in adulthood is about creating and maintaining intimacy. And it relies heavily on the mastery of earlier emotional stages. So I'm going to get up and close our door because we've got all the animals with us today. This is our Freaky Friday. And here we are. We're just going to make this work. And now the animals are probably going to have it out with each other. So apologize for any disruptions we have. So the as a reminder, this will reference previous podcasts we've had and the work that we really do with clients when we're formulating and trying to understand where clients are. Hello, Edward. are the emotional stages of trust, control, self-worth, and identity. So those are the four main emotional stages that we want to master in our development. And the degree of success that we have with any of those stages will prepare or not prepare us for that adult stage of creating and maintaining intimacy. And we can track that with clients so that they can begin to understand some of their patterns that they're having with their partners in terms of who they're picking, how it's playing out, how the relationship ended and why. And also, I always ask this question, what's common feedback you're getting from your partners? And people are kind of always surprised by that question, but that gives us so much information for us as the clinicians helping individuals or couples in their romantic relationships. And it's always a very useful information for the clients themselves, because for most of us, when we're in that difficult, you know, predicament or conflicts, we can tend to be very myopic and look at just that, get sucked into that black hole of what's currently happening. And so there's a lot of power that comes from stepping back and saying, like, how did I get here? Why am I making the same mistakes? Why is my romantic relationships playing out almost in the same way? New person, you know, same problems. It can be very empowering to clients. So that's our topic. That's the intro. What do you think about this topic, Janice?
Yeah, no, I'm actually really excited to hear more about, you know, the work that you do, particularly with couples and the approach that you take, and really the questions you ask, right? Because when couples come in, I'm almost like, I'm assuming they're in the stage where there's something they want to work on in their
Yeah.
relationship or improve on. So yeah, I'm really excited. And I guess I just kind of want to hear from you more. Like, how do you start that? What are those questions you start off with? And how do you navigate like challenges? Do you ever find couples start arguing within sessions? Like, very curious to know all
Yeah,
that.
it's
Yeah.
a really dynamic part of the work, and honestly, this can almost be like my favorite part of the work. Sorry, Edward, did you step on something? Oh my gosh, are we still there? It's almost my favorite part of the work because it's such so dynamic and very, very interesting. And we will see couples at any stages. I love working with millennials because they will, and I think I referenced this recently, that millennials more than ever are coming in for premarital counseling. And I think we did that on that marriage podcast, right? So I'll see couples that are brand new, couples who are getting married, or couples who are in the thick of major conflicts that are, really hurting them, or even couples who've already made the decision to separate or divorce, and how to create a healing separation for them and their families. As you know, and our listeners know, if you've listened to other podcasts, we have a very accountable therapy approach. So we have a structured process, and that starts from session one. Well, it starts from our initial call with our clients, actually, but really we drop into that in the first session. And as we do with our individuals, who we ask specific questions around stressful points and impact, and then the history that really helps us formulate. I do the same thing with couples, but obviously we've got two people in the room. And so it's a very kind of quick-paced, structured session. Sometimes I will call this the emotional X-ray, because really my job, our job in our work with couples is to be able to explain to them how they got here. And I will tell you, this is the game changer, because more times than not, when a couple comes in, especially if there's been a high degree of conflict, and I can help them ex understand what's happening at a deeper level, it is incredibly liberating, because couples will come in almost at that point of giving up, right? At least maybe one of the partners, if not both. And when they leave, more times than not, they have some hope, and some better understanding, and it really liberates them to understand kind of like what's going on and why. And it doesn't mean I'm a bad person, or even my partner who's been hurting me so much may not be a bad person either. So I would say right from the get-go, what we're trying to do is offer a formulation, so that by the time our couples are leaving that first session, they have some of that information that helps them make sense of what's going on. So imagine two people in the room, and we will be tracking what are their main concerns that they're coming in with about their relationship or their partner, and how are those concerns impacting them. From their perspective, how it's impacting them individually and how it's impacting their relationship. Right from the get-go, if there's a high degree of conflict, I may sometimes see the arguing begin right from the very beginning. Because if I'm with somebody who I've been really hurt by, and I hear them talking about the problems, chances are it's almost taken as a given that my experience of this is going to be so different than yours. And so the triggers happen almost from the get-go, because you will hear your partner talking about things, and you can hear the wheels turning, going, "What? I don't believe he just said that. I can't believe she really thinks of it that way." And so the structure I provide is that safe space, because I'll often say to couples, "You're not hiring me to watch you argue. You already know how to do that." And so I find a polite, respectful way to interrupt and say something like, I will definitely get to your version of what's happening for you. I want to, let's let your partner finish, and then like guarantee I will get to hearing your part of it. And I will even begin to start that education right from the beginning to say, let's take it as a given that the two of you have had unique life experiences, different ways of coping. And those two things combined will give you very different versions of what you remember or what sticks out or what hurt you the most that is going to be different than how your partner experienced it. And that's why you're here. And I really try to provide a very safe platform where we've invited somebody into our life to invite us to grow in a certain way. And that will, chances are, be part of the attraction we had to them. So for example, you know, people who grew up with a lot of chaos, right, will attract a partner who sometimes is directly the opposite, who is very low-key, you know, very level-headed. And the initial attraction of that partner will be like, oh, this is so much better. I grew up with so much chaos. My partner is so quiet, right? What happened, right, is those initial attractions will become frustrations because then you will hear that same partner say, right, I never know what he's thinking, right? Yes. I don't even know if he's listening to me. I don't even know if it mattered to him what I told him, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a huge amount of education to provide the couples we work with because we need to begin to live from that deeper dialogue or narrative that says, I've invited somebody into my life that either will replicate what I grew up with or the opposite. And those initial attractions will be something I need, right? But I will get frustrated. Why? Because I will resist the invitation to grow.
Yes.
So if I had grew up with chaos, just to continue to use that as the example, and my partner shows up with chaos, the literal invitation is that if I have a partner who pushes back a lot, but is here with me in session to try and work this out, then I may be able to kind of revisit the chaos from my childhood, but do it in a way with my partner where the process and where we land or end up is so much better than what was possible in my childhood. And the other part of that coin, because oftentimes the wound itself does operate from two completely different sides, I've invited a partner into my life who is very quiet and still. And that will start to feel painful to me because I won't feel acknowledged because I'm so used to, well, fighting meant attention or fighting meant love or chaos meant you noticed me. And so I recover my wound from the other side, which is how do I find out that I still matter to my partner? But they offer a very different response. Either way, we have the huge opportunity to master that wound.
Yeah.
So right from the beginning, I will get those impressions, the concerns, and the impact. And then I will walk us through a very specific history taking. We owe it to the couples we're working with to give them a credible explanation, a different view that they came in with. So this draws heavily on the work of Harvill Hendricks and the Imago model of couples. There's a lot to the Imago approach, but the key part that we start off with from that initial assessment session is to create the Imago match story, where we can pinpoint for each partner what they were impacted by negatively in their childhood or teenage years, or in their early adulthood, and why they attracted their partner into their life, usually unconsciously, and why the conflict is happening because what they invited in was what they needed, and then they didn't know what to do with it. And for most of us, we will regress and revert back to almost our child way of reacting, because we don't really fully understand what's happening.
Yep.
And that means when it's at that unconscious level, we will either shame ourselves and we will create that narrative that replicates our childhood narrative of, I knew I wasn't good enough. I knew that I didn't really deserve to be in a relationship. no matter what I do, it's always wrong. Or what is more common is they will see the partner as the enemy. He never gets me. He never understands me. She doesn't listen. It always has to be her way. And we will project our wounded self onto our partner. And that will le usually lead us towards what I call enemy territory, right? So that's our job. I take it very seriously that we owe it to those couples, to provide that imago narrative. On a handful of occasions, I will see a couple where that isn't happening. Very, very rare. But on occasion, I will see couples who are completely disengaged, not because they're sick of the fighting, but because there was never really that match to begin with. And most of the time, that comes from either we are too much the same, we never argue, we get along, we're actually pretty good friends, but it's too platonic and there isn't that fire to ignite them to grow. So we kind of are dating ourselves at that point and we're like, well, sure, it's smooth, boring, usually bad sex, not a lot of chemistry, and usually not a lot of fighting. And the other place that I see where there's not a good imago match, and this is, my opinion, is when there really is not a lot of compatibility, because we want enough difference to grow. But if we are so completely different, then we don't even have enough to connect us. Most of the time, people will come in using incompatibility where it doesn't really apply. Because more often than not, we will say we're incompatible because we're always fighting. And I see the light bulbs go off with 90% of the couples I see who come in fighting. When I say something like this, like the fighting is actually a great sign because it means that you're wrestling with that growth. You know, can you hear me? Did you hear what I had to say? Can you just be quiet for a minute? All of these pieces where there's a feisty fight for the growth, and we're going in circles. So that's where I start, and that's the approach we take.
That was definitely good stuff.
Lot. I
I
know.
learned a
Feel
lot,
like I
but
talked nonstop there for about 10 minutes.
no, it was amazing because it's kind of like it puts deeper meaning to the phrase opposites attract, right? Because a lot of people that I talk to, they just say it so casually, yeah, like opposites attract, my partner likes doing this, whereas I'm a homebody. But it really put the deeper meaning to it, which I love because it's like taking all of your experiences, different experiences,
That's
up until
right.
the point that you meet. And I really loved what you said about either those invitation, either those initial attractions can be taken as invitations for growth or, change, or you start to get frustrated and resent it. And then it's that, what do we do to kind of bring us together? And it's finding that common ground, right? That
That's
balance is
right.
what I heard a lot of, like, just like what you said, either if you're the exact same person, there's no challenge or growth because it's like you said, you're dating the same person. Or if it's like way off, then it's like,
That's right.
how do we ever kind of connect? So
That's
I know
right.
it's a lot of information, but
I
I personally
know.
like
I know.
enjoyed hearing
Yeah.
about it.
Yeah. Because I would say most of the time, and again, this is my opinion, relationships end when they didn't have to. And sometimes when I meet a couple that have already given up, or I'm meeting an individual who's had a repetitive, dating history that's been unfulfilling and problematic. And when I take their histories, I start to see what probably was that imago match with one of their past relationship partners, and that there was a missed opportunity. But people come in when they're ready to, and never say never, because we need to move forward with what we know, regardless of what stage. But the imago theory tells us this, that if there is that imago match, then there are three stages, right? So the initial stage is the romance stage. And this can usually last anywhere from a year to like 2.5 years, sometimes shorter than a year, but we're on our best behavior. We've attracted somebody in and we're kind of on our best behavior. Some people will say it's false advertising, but really it's really just like we've really become strongly attracted to somebody. We're falling in love, and we want it to work, And but then the second stage is that necessary conflict stage. And this is where couples will either break up, cheat, or become platonic, friends instead of lovers. And this is where we see a lot of the trouble, and the couples that come to us will be in that stage. So, reframing that as part of the natural stages, because you're at that stage, and couples who pick each other well will go into that stage, right? And our job is to help carry those couples to the deeper intimate stage, which is that third stage. It's never usually, sometimes I'll hear people say, I just want it to be like it used to be, right? I used to come home and we'd have dinner and, we'd have sex and, we were dating all the time. And there's always good elements of that. So it's not like, oh, that doesn't matter anymore. But the deep intimacy stage will be much stronger love, will be much healthier love than the romance stage at the beginning.
Yes.
And our ways of communicating, the intensity of our communications, the abilities to manage those conflicts. Because here's the deal, right? This is what we're trying to do with our couples. And what we do most of the time is that we flip it on its back. So rather than you're my enemy, I start to see why I picked you and what this actually means to me. So if I can heal my deeper wounds through the work that I do in therapy with you, and you're there to be part of it, then really we kill two birds with one stone, because then my couples therapy helps me heal from what I brought into this relationship. And because my partner was part of it, I fall in love with them all over again at a deeper level. And I will start to use the word magic, which I very rarely use in therapy, but I will use it here because I see it happening all the time. And it's a more mature love. And so then when the couples graduate from our programs, they've learned more about themselves, they've learned more about their partners, they have those key tools and strategies. So generally speaking, couples don't have to come back to us in a year and say, okay, well, we solved the money problem and now we have a parenting problem. Because it's more about the process of maturing the love with the couples we work with so that they can pretty much tackle anything. I mean, sometimes we enter a new developmental stage where we retire or we're empty nesters now, and sometimes there's a bit of tweaking, but generally speaking, we provide that healing process while building strategies so couples have what they need. So it is magical. It is totally magical. And sometimes I think of, the kids that we never meet, because if a couple comes in with children, I know that when we help people feel happier and more fulfilled and their relationship is healthier, it has a direct impact on their home, including their children. Children are growing up, for the parents that we see, growing up in the midst of that conflict, and they are doing their own adaptation. So that's why we will see intergenerational patterns of abuse or trauma or conflict avoidance, and we keep repeating. So we break the cycle, not just for that partner, not just for their relationship, but for the entire family and the generations to follow.
Do you find often like both partners are on the same page when they come in? Like they're both equally invested and they're both like, super motivated to start therapy? Or do you find sometimes it's one partner that is like, okay, we need to go to therapy, like we need counseling to kind of improve?
I kind of call this like there's the dragger and the draggy, I wish I could say that most of the time couples show up and say, yeah, we've come to this conclusion, we're here to help. I'm not saying that doesn't happen. It's just rarely. Because of our different styles of coping and our own personal journeys, oftentimes they're even disagreeing about whether they should try therapy or not. Or the, even though therapy is becoming more acceptable, there still is that trend for people to push down and push on. So the collateral damage by the time people come to our door is usually pretty high. And usually that means at least one partner has started, if not already given up. And it's been too painful. And they don't want to put themselves out there again to be hurt again. Or in the case where there's been cheating or infidelity, I'm so over this. Why would I put myself through this? Why am I even here? And I hear even people blaming themselves. I don't know what's wrong with me that I'm here with my partner who cheated. Like, there must be something really wrong with me. So it could be following a chronic long-term stage of arguing and conflict that has worn us down. There could be cheating or other betrayals within the relationship, and people don't feel like they can be vulnerable to show up. But if they do, and they've been dragged in, this is our job, because if I can figure out whether the imago matches there or not, and whether they really deserve to be in each other's life and there's potential, then I will provide that information in a way that invites that partner, or in some cases both partners, to help them understand what have they got to lose. Because my job will be not to watch them re-hurt each other, but to pave the way to something better. And I don't ever say that lightly, because really it's a personal choice. Because sometimes, not often, but sometimes people say, you know, thank you, no thank you. Most of the time, there is a bit of that ambiguity of that I'm literally at the end of my rope, but I've invested so much time or energy, or even in my own dream of what I thought this relationship was going to be like. So they're ready to give up, but not quite, because they've actually, to some degree, allowed themselves to be dragged in.
Right.
But our job is to provide that information to create hope only when it's warranted, right? I will be very straight with couples if I don't think they should be together. I offer my opinion. Most of the time, though, we will see couples embroiled in that conflict stage, and it gives them some hope that this is happening for a good reason, that they're not a bad person and neither is their partner. And the idea that we know, right, at an unconscious level, we will continue to repeat our pattern. And so going through the upheaval, whatever that means, whether it's selling property, you know, hiring divorce lawyers, you know, moving, you know, all kinds of upheaval that comes from separation, you know, the natural upheaval will happen. And then we will be right back where we started again, maybe a year or 2 years later with somebody new. It's a bit of like a mind game, you know?
Yep.
So I point that out as well. And usually that can help, you know, broaden our perception of what's really going on and what would really help.
Yeah, for sure. Something I'm really curious about is, like, how do you work with couples where one partner has cheated? Because I find a lot of times when there's that deeper wound or betrayal, like, you know how people say once a cheater, always a cheater. And like, to really move past that, to be able to trust your partner again and give them that second chance, and knowing when, you know, when you should give that second chance. Like, do you see a lot of that with couple work, and how do you kind of navigate that?
Yeah, unfortunately, it's very common. I think the online dating, the all the, and the Ashley Madisons of the world. I mean, cheating has always happened. Is it happening more? Are we just hearing about it more? You know, what is happening with the internet and technology?
Right.
All these devices that we have all this secret information on. It's just made it too easy. And unfortunately, there's a high rate. I don't know what the current stat is, but it's high. And this is heartbreaking. And so I see a lot of this. And what we really want to do with this is do an initial program on betrayal. So sometimes what I'll say is you can't frost a burnt cake. And I don't mean to make light of the experience, but if your cake is dry and burnt and crumbling apart, and you try to smooth icing on the top with some nice therapy, the crumbs will come up from the back, from the bottom. And without trust, right, what are we even building, right? It's like trying to build a house without a foundation, you know? Sometimes I'll say it's like trying to run the car without gas in the tank, you know? So apart from creating a vision of what the two want, because surprisingly enough, most couples that come on, you know, regardless of what they've been dealing with, still want the same thing. So we still create a vision exercise to help them unify, to say, if despite all the craziness and hurt and pain, what if it turned out that we both actually still wanted the same thing? And that's rehabilitative right from the very beginning. But before getting into any couple CBT work that I do or the deeper imago work, we have to go after the betrayal. This is a really important part of that work. And I start with coaching sessions where I will separate out the partners into individual sessions temporarily. Because usually the person who's been the receiver of the betrayal needs some individual support towards grounding the betrayal and grief. Because if that betrayal isn't grounded, it will keep swirling around. And a lot of partners we see who are going through this, as we're like trying desperately to make sense of what happened, we go back over those questions of like, why could he and why didn't he and why should he have? And it's like, I don't get how that happened. And it's part of the anxiety of what gets stirred up for us because we've experienced betrayal. And more times than not, this wasn't our first experience of betrayal. So the coaching sessions with each partner is very important at that stage so that the person who felt betrayed can get answers to questions they never asked or questions they asked, but they never really got the full or honest answer to. They also have to be coached to be able to discuss the impact, the full impact with their partner. And lastly, talk about what would make a difference for them moving forward to rebuild trust. So they move from being a victim to being an advocate for their experiences of betrayal. I provide coaching sessions to the person who committed the betrayal because that person has to be ready to answer those questions, validate on impact, take full responsibility, and be able to work with what their partner is saying is going to help them rebuild trust. My job, our job, is to find a way to make sure that the requests are reasonable. The invitation at the end of that initial betrayal work is to put a boundary around that, so that we're not swirling back over it. You know, sometimes I say this is kind of like the return on your emotional investment, because talking and asking and pleading will only get us so far. And at some point, we are indulging anxiety and fear and distrust. And we're the benefit of all of that work will get outvalued by the cost of what it takes to keep going back over the same stuff. So it's a very delicate operation and part of our therapy, because once betrayal is grounded, the expectation is there is a boundary around that so that we can move forward. And I'm always looking to make sure that the person who committed the betrayal is living in the request that that person made. So the requirement is I've cut off all contacts to people I've cheated with. I have evidence that that has been done. And I am showing you that I answered your questions, validated your impact, took full responsibility, and am living in the request that you make, as in addition to cutting off those contacts. So that means sharing passwords on devices, showing proof of conversations that I've ended things and recommitting to my marriage or my primary relationship. All of those pieces to make it much more transparent. And sometimes the person who's committed the betrayal going, you know, she violated my privacy. It's kind of like I blame the person for calling the police that I just robbed, you know. Sometimes I'll call it the Tiger Woods syndrome. On occasion, there are a few people that come to me with their partner who've committed betrayals, and the pattern and the ruptures are so severe that that person really does not have full capacity to build a monogamous relationship. And I know there's like we could do a whole other podcast on polyamory and open relationships, but assuming what we're talking about today is monogamy, right? And sometimes I apply the Tiger Woods syndrome to that because of the sheer number of extramarital partners Tiger Woods had. You just knew, at least what was posted in the media, that his level of brokenness or narcissism was so severe that chances are he needed to do very long-term individual work before he could be part of any couple work. I sometimes see that, but most of the time, what I see are moderately broken people who were usually very unhappy as children, usually suffered some severe abandonment as children, and developed passive aggressive ways of coping. More often than not, the betrayal and the infidelity is part of that passive aggressive reaction to stress in the relationship that is normal stress, where there are conflicts, there are disagreements, but I have a passive aggressive way of responding, or reacting is a better way of saying that. And that can extend towards having extramarital partners. And so beginning to broaden the perspective of why the betrayal happened, yes, we have to dedicate that specific betrayal work at the beginning. And then what happens is that frees us up to actually do the real work. Because most of the time, the affairs are symptoms. Symptoms not only of that person's passive aggressive reaction to stress, but a story within that couple relationship that is worth recovering and healing. So that's a very specific part of the work that we do. And then we get back to looking at our couple CBT program and the Imago. And we work through many different styles of dialoguing that capitalizes on the individual strategy building, and move us into deeper dialogues. I've developed, we do the classic Imago dialogue. I've also created models for micro dialogues that are much shorter when we don't have a lot of time, but we need to sort something out. And then I've added in something called deeper healing dialogues, which is similar to what we do with individuals where we do sentence completion, but we do a sentence completion of our deep, deep life experiences. And we do that with our partners. So that's in a nutshell of what we're doing. So we don't watch arguing. We follow a structure that will feed the client's relationship. We give them a safe place to land, and we are flexible. So some people will come in and say, "Can I have a couple of sessions?" And we process that out in a way that keeps everybody feeling safe. So we could easily go another hour on this, couldn't we? Maybe we need to do a part two of doing an even deeper dive. But I hope that for our listeners today, that gives some information as to how we approach couple work. What are some of the trends and patterns that we see? How do we create accountable therapy for couples where we're looking at stress management and deeper healing, and how we specifically look at it? Let me add one more piece that I wanted to mention. My cat is literally sitting on my notes here. There's three things from the research that we know, and I'll sprinkle this on before we wrap. We know from the research that specific changes creates real change. And I know that sounds a bit like common sense, but when we do work with couples, we want to be able to pinpoint specific things that they're going to be doing differently. So we can't just communicate better. What is it specifically about the communication that is going to be better, and how do we do that? The other two points about the research that we know about is that when there is name calling, when conflicts cross that line where one or both partners are calling each other those derogatory names, the research tells us that the recovery for those couples or the prognosis for those couples are much less positive, and less likely to lead to a positive outcome. And the other part that we know from the research is when there's been a period of disengagement, either because they were never a good imago match to begin with, or that the prolonged chronic conflict has worn partners down. And the research tells us that when the couples have entered that prolonged period of disengagement, the prognosis also goes down. So there's a lot of moving parts on this, but I did want to put in those last few pieces about the research because that can really guide our work. Yeah. And we can pinpoint for the couples we work with the areas that really require a lot of attention. So that's our wrap for today. I hope that was useful to listeners out there who may be considering couples counseling or are in couples counseling and want to get the most out of it. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm Karen Goslin, KarenRSW@yahoo.ca. You can reach me directly at 647-985-0633. And our associate, Janice Souza, who's recently married, so is working her own couple relationship actively right now. And how can listeners find you, Janice?
Yes, listeners can find me at j6dsouza@gmail.com. And my direct line is 416-316-7686.
All right, perfect. Have a great weekend. And that, again, was Straight Talk for Mental Health.